Welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We're always online at npr.org. And you, the good people of NetWorld, County Google, Town of YouTubes, you're always emailing and sharing, and we're collecting and noticing, and we'll put it together in a handy packet, and it's the most. Tricia, why don't you start us off with the most popular where?
Yes, I have one of the most popular stories on Reuters, and it's about Ron Paul. I talked about him just recently, and one of the things I said was, you know, he's still running for president. His website at the time said there were 11, now there are two. Well, so yesterday he spoke at the Texas Republican Convention, and apparently he has dropped out of the presidential race for the GOP nomination. I say apparently because it sort of seemed very clear to me. I went on his website and there were all kinds of things on there saying, you know, the presidential campaign is at an end. But then, you know, I'm trying to be responsible and check around. So this morning, the LA Times has published a story that basically says, well, the headline is Ron Paul doesn't concede but intends to lead, and it says the Ron Paul revolution isn't over until Ron Paul says it's over, and he's not done yet. And they kind of parse the speech he gave and that he never actually said, I'm actually dropping out.
Does his website say there were 11, now there's one?
No, actually, well, he's got two websites now, and one of them says, now that the primary season's over, quote, the presidential campaign is at an end. So that seems fairly definitive to me. This blog on the LA Times, though, said, kind of tongue-in-cheek, suggests that the website's been hacked. Anyway, I put in a call to the campaign just for triple confirmation, but I'm pretty certain Ron Paul is no longer running for the Republican nomination.
The sad thing about Trish is even if she didn't work for the Bryant Park Project or in media, she would still put in a call for triple confirmation.
I probably still would, because now I'm confused. Thank you, LA Times.
Well, speaking of the LA Times and the Minnesota Tribune and a lot of other newspapers, their most emailed story, or among their most emailed story, is about Barack Obama starting a website to combat internet rumors. As a matter of fact, not just them, but NPR's David Folkenflik reported on this yesterday. It's a website called fightthesmears.com. Let's listen to a brief clip of Mr. Folkenflik's stories.
Presumably, the job of the press is to not go around and spread scurrilous rumors like this until there's actually anything, one iota of substance or evidence that would substantiate it.
That's the way it's supposed to work. But for now, the Obama campaign has decided to take matters into its own hands, publishing rumors on its own website and then knocking them down.
And this is what's fascinating about this story. Most of the mainstream media, the two sources I cite, like the Minnesota Strib and the LA Times and all these other sites, they would not have ever mentioned a lot of the rumors on the site. So that's why the most popular story on the Minnesota Star Tribune is campaign. Michelle Obama never used the word whitey. And that's why the LA Times kind of congratulates itself on saying, media columnist James Rainey says, most news outlets in the campaign chose not to dignify the whitey claims with a response. So it's a story how they're trying to say Michelle Obama never said whitey. And a lot of people are like, I never knew Michelle Obama was alleged to have said whitey. And I'll get out of this. But listen to this. This is a comment from the Minnesota Star Tribune site. And the number one comment was that they read the Fight the Smears campaign, and they thought there was a little bit too much parsing about whether she ever said whitey, that the comments knocking it down were more about no tape exists. Maybe she did say whitey. Interesting, interesting story. All right, Ian, you got one.
Yeah, this is actually from the LA Times as well. Most emailed there. There's this obscenity case there. This filmmaker makes these sexually explicit films, and there's a trial to determine whether or not they're criminally obscene. He says they're artistic. Anyway, so the judge overseeing this is the chief judge of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And it's not a appeals case, but there's a system by which they kind of rotate in and oversee criminal cases. Anyway, the prosecutor this week requested a stay to explore, quote, a potential conflict of interest concerning the court having a sexually explicit website with similar material to what is on trial here. So it turns out that he has a site which he posts his legal writings and also some pictures of people having sex. and some other inappropriate materials.
Was that the case of Pizza Boy versus Can We Find Another Way to Pay You?
Yeah.
So, you know, so there
was a collective shudder.
Yeah.
I thought that was a very nice way to put it. Okay. What do I know? I thought that was cliche.
So Kaczynski has defended it, saying, you know, some of it's just funny. Some of it is inappropriate. And now he's saying, you know, my son may have actually posted some of it, even after he said he did put it there. He's kind of known as being a defender of free speech. And actually, when he found out the appeals court offices in Pasadena had filters on the computers that limited access to some things, including pornography, he led a successful campaign to get those filters removed. So,
well, since we were at the L.A. Times then, Lauren, let's stay with the L.A. Times.
Well, this is crazy.
Mine's number
the most
eight
of the L.A. Times.
On the L.A. Times. And it's a story about Perez Hilton. It's cross-listed under business and under entertainment, which I think is appropriate because he's all business when he draws hearts on Zac Efron's crotch. I don't really care about Perez Hilton's site, but I learned a lot from this article, like that he's 30, he got a bachelor's in theater from NYU, and that his site gets 7 million page views a day, which makes a one-day ad package on his site worth up to $54,000 just for a one-day ad, which I thought was pretty unbelievable.
Does he promise not to, you know, draw naughty pictures on the ads? Like, if you pay him, will he not defame you? Or all bets are off?
I don't know. I don't think... That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I think he's going to play by the rules.
Right. There's the ad rate where he won't make fun of you, and then the slightly higher rate where you will.
I'm
going to cop to being a Perez Hilton reader, and I started reading him back when his site was called Page 666 before he got sued for using that name.
Uh-huh.
And he does not draw on his ads, I have to say.
Hey, Trish, while you're there, you got a Google trend for us besides
Ron
Paul?
I do. This is not Ron Paul related, thank goodness. Susie Essman is a name that's been all over Google Trends this morning. She's a comedian. You know, she's well known for being on Larry David's show on HBO. But she was a contestant, or a celebrity contestant, I guess, on this primetime version of Password that was on last night. So here are the related searches to Susie Essman. Betty White. Mm-hmm. How old is Betty White? Mm-hmm. Betty White age. $1 million password. Alan Ludden. So anything that involves Betty White, I have to do it on the show because I love her so much. So there's this primetime version of Password. Betty White was the other celebrity contestant. And Regis Philbin is the host. So he introduced Betty White, reminding everybody that she was on every version of Password since the beginning of time.
Right?
She was actually married to the host, Alan Ludden. So here's a little clip of her charming rejoinder to that.
I slept with a host of Password for all those years.
No wonder you got invited back.
What are you doing, Regis?
She's so saucy. I love Betty White.
Trish loves Betty Wright.
I do.
Betty White. Matt, you want to take us to the bridge?
I will take you to the bridge. One of the most emailed at NPR right now is Trip Illuminates Life on Bases Across Afghan Desert. Now, there are like tens of thousands of NATO soldiers spread out all over southern and eastern Afghanistan. We're so focused on Iraq, we sometimes forget that. Battling Taliban militants and other insurgents. Anyway, this audio postcard by Ivan Watson is kind of exactly what the headline says, an illumination of life on those bases in Afghanistan. Here it is.
It took 4 days to travel from the Afghan capital to this marine outpost in the southern part of the country. One of the first stops on the journey was the sprawling air base outside the city of Kandahar. On Sunday night, thousands of soldiers stood on the tarmac here to bid farewell to a Canadian soldier who died in the line of duty.
Almighty God, we entrust Jonathan to your gracious care and keeping.
Captain Jonathan Snyder died while on night patrol when he accidentally fell into a 60-foot deep well. Canada has lost 85 soldiers and one diplomat in Afghanistan. Some 2,500 Canadian soldiers are based outside Kandahar. They're part of a kaleidoscope of different military units deployed across southern Afghanistan. It takes less than an hour to fly aboard a C-130 cargo plane from Kandahar to the main British military base in Helmand province. The British force of some 7,500 soldiers in Helmand suffered fresh casualties on Sunday when a suicide bomber attacked a foot patrol and killed 3 soldiers.
That represented the 100th death that British soldiers had incurred while engaged on operations in Afghanistan.
Lieutenant Colonel Robin Matthews is the spokesman for the British force here.
We're now dealing with a a counterinsurgency campaign. Campaign is the key here. I think everybody now acknowledges the scale of the problem.
From the British base, a twin-rotored helicopter ferries U.S. Marines and equipment to Camp Dwyer. Camp Dwyer is another British base that's also now home to the U.S. Marines' 24th Expeditionary Unit. It's a Spartan place. There are no showers at Camp Dwyer and little electricity. Marines swelter in the desert heat in tents with dirt floors infested by camel spiders the size of your hand.
Next truck after the MRAP head, Staff Sergeant Graham, Staff Sergeant Bagger, and the...
Yesterday, Staff Sergeant Dale Cortman prepared to lead a large supply convoy across Garmsir District, which had long been a lawless region near the border with Pakistan.
We've got a huge convoy, lots of moving parts, 16 VICs total. What we're doing is we're going to go straight across the desert. Over
the Marines captured much of this district from the Taliban after weeks of fighting last month.
Pray for safety. Safety from suicide threats, from IEDs, from all the other dangers that are out there.
Let's mount up.
One of the Marines on board the supply convoy was 19-year-old Doug Hicks from Florida. His job was to guard three detainees in an armored truck. The prisoners wore plastic flex cuffs and blindfolds. Hicks barely interacted with them, except to hand them bottles of water. The convoy rolled down dirt roads, past endless fields of opium poppies and mud brick farm houses. 19-year-old Hicks was not impressed.
This place, I just say it's pretty much hell. It's hot, dusty, doesn't rain, everything's tan.
The convoy finally arrived at the improvised headquarters of this company of Marines.
Oh, snap!
The young Marine stationed here made a long human chain and spent more than an hour offloading bottles of water from the trucks in the 120-degree heat.
If mail's on the truck, it's the highlight of the day.
Yeah. There ain't no mail, you just get pissed off.
A few lucky Marines also received their mail. They sat in the dirt of their mud brick compound and read letters to each other out loud under a setting sun.
That was NPR's Ivan Watson reporting from Afghanistan. You can hear this and all the stories you heard on The Most at our website, npr.org/Bryant Park.